Good morning. It is now 9 o'clock, so we're going to get rolling. This is the panel number 1115, Art Without Borders. And the first thing I want to do, because so as an art panel, one of the things that's really hot right now in art is immersive and participatory art. So I'd like to invite everybody in the audience to reach into your pocket or your bag and pull out your phone and then switch it to silent mode. This is the participation part. Thank you for doing that. This is obviously being broadcast and recorded, or I don't know if it's obvious that it's broadcast, but it is being recorded, so just keep that in mind, just so you know. Sorry, they give me a lot of notes, and as many of our panelists on here, I am a rookie at doing this, so bear with me. First of all, I wanted to introduce myself. My name is Cindy Sapuka, and I am going to be moderating the panel today. I currently serve as the executive director for a Boulder arts nonprofit, Open Studios. We're a visual arts nonprofit that helps promote and support art and artists in Boulder. Before doing that job, I was a professional visual artist for about 20 years. So that's why I'm here. And I also wanted to share with you guys, actually this is more business, if you haven't downloaded the app, it's a really good idea to do that because you can submit questions via the app. So if you have questions about that, Emily, where is Emily? Emily might be able to help you. She's one of our student producers, so if you want to chat with her quickly. Cool. So before introducing our panelists, I wanted to introduce our producers. And the producers are people who have volunteered with CWA over the last year or more and also continue their volunteer service by coming and helping to make these things happen. So these are people who have dedicated like countless hours to this event, which is just awesome because this whole event is run by volunteers. So I want to introduce Joyce Bograd, Bob Baskerville, and Emily Volk. And these are some of the people who have helped come up with the panels that you will enjoy all week long and invite the panelists as well. Okay. All right, so our panelists. You guys, if you have the app or the printed program, you can read all about them and their bio in there, and so I'm not going to tell you about what all the stuff that's in their bio, but I would like to share with you a little tidbit about each one of them. So the first panelist up here is Amar Bakshi. Did I pronounce that right?
Yep.
Good. And an interesting thing about Amar, in addition to his brilliant Portals project, with if you're not familiar with, it is in your best interest to become familiar with it. There's a portal on campus right now, so check it out. Amar was several years ago arrested in Zimbabwe for stealing government secrets. And he successfully argued the truth, his way out of that whole situation, which is good because I imagine that that carries with it a hefty penalty. And so I'm glad that he did and he's here and he created portals since then. That was a while ago. Yeah. Our next panelist is Lena Gutschung. Did I say that right? Good. And Lena is a circus artist and producer. So Lena can put her both legs behind her head, but she's really super excited about moving in with her long-distance boyfriend after several years of having a long-distance relationship. That's what's exciting right now. Our next panelist is Claire Daly. She's a saxophonist, and she won Simon Says on Sonny Fox's last Wonderama back in the day. Anybody know what that means? Oh, darn it.
Excellent.
And then there's Elliot Pepper. Did I say that right?
You did.
Good.
Yeah, 4 for 4.
Elliot is a writer extraordinaire and all kinds of other things. But what's really interesting about him, well, among lots of other things, that he holds 3 passports to the U.S., Canada, and Holland, and he once smuggled industrial plasma torches across the U.S.-Mexican border. And then we have Ronnie Barak, another percussionist extraordinaire, not another percussionist, but another extraordinaire in percussion. Yeah. And he has lots of interesting stories that he's going to share with us about his experiences. Is this on?
Yeah.
Okay. His experiences internationally, performing and traveling internationally. And one very interesting tidbit about him is that he was kidnapped as a child.
Hmm.
Only for a couple hours.
Yeah. So it was fun.
All right, let's get rolling. I'm sorry, I'm supposed to read this, too. Another housekeeping thing. Okay, in this CWA session, we will utilize both the CWA app, which I already mentioned, and a note card system to receive questions from the audience. Do we have note cards? Okay. So if you can't navigate the app, you can write your question on a note card. And so to ask a question on the app, you simply select the session in the schedule, tap live Q&A, and then insert your question, and it will come directly to me. And then I will ask that question of our panelists. And then you can also raise your hand at any time to request a note card from and a pencil from one of our producers, then give your question to that producer, which they will then bring it up to me. And if you're a student, please make note of that on your card because you get first dibs. Questioners who would like to verbalize their question can note this in the text, including your name, and if selected your question, I will recognize you and invite you to the microphone. Okay, I think that's all of the housekeeping we have. So, Art Without Borders. I asked our panelists beforehand, okay, you saw this title. The CWA comes up with these titles, and they're kind of nebulous and open to interpretation, so my first question to our panelists is, Art Without Borders, what does that mean to you? And we're going to start with Amar.
Okay. It made me think of the historical definitions of art and how they've changed. And how currently, one definition of art that seems to have broad global recognition. Well, actually, how long am I supposed to take to answer this? Because now I'm suddenly realizing that would be just a
couple of minutes.
Okay. One definition that currently seems to have broad grab across the world is this idea that it's a domain of life that is not oriented towards a particular end. So, you know, if you like a painting and you think it's beautiful, and you say, you know, this is a great piece of art, that's quite different than saying, you know, I'm going to flip this painting and make a profit. In a world where most of our activity is oriented towards some end, this is actually a very unique space. It's a unique contemporary definition. And so the fact that this definition exists all over the world, I think is part of the result of globalization. It's part of a result of a global elite that has had this definition and disseminated it. But it's very different than how art was defined or has been in, you know, Afghanistan for many years, or India. It's a long way of saying that this contemporary definition opens up a space in our lives where there's a similar understanding of art in Afghanistan and here and in Mexico. And this is relevant to what I do because I set up a project called Portals, which is basically you enter a big gold shipping container and you talk to people live in other parts of the world. And the reason it works is partly because people from Afghanistan to Mexico, when you say this is an art project, come into it and don't expect to get a date, to get a job, to get money. They come into it with the expectation that something other than that will happen. And I think this is really important because it opens up something that we're currently lacking, which is a chance to meet people, to have encounters where we can feel and convey our own authentic truth without having to say or prove why someone feels a certain way. So I can circle back to that, but at a time when a lot of our newspapers feel like they're bought by advertisers or our politicians feel bought by special interests, art in this current definition is that space where, at least in theory, people can come and exchange what they think to be fundamentally true. And so at a time with hardening borders, at a time when there's a lot of suspicion about others, I think art actually has an incredibly unique and powerful potential to bridge these forms of distance.
Lena?
Good morning. I think it's a very exciting topic to start this conference with, and it's my first time at the conference, so thank you for the invitation, and I'm super excited to be on this panel with the with my fellow panelists, and I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say about this topic as well, and I'm looking forward to your questions as well. So when I was thinking about arts, can you hear me okay with this microphone?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Closer? Okay. Into my mouth.
That's it.
Okay, let me know if I get, if I'm not being heard well enough. So, of course, as a circus performer, I was thinking a lot about all of the physical borders that I've crossed in my professional life. And I've traveled to many different countries, and I've had the privilege to work with a lot of artists from different countries. And I kind of felt like circus is an international cosmopolitan universe, and it really lives from this internationality and from the border crossing. So to us as circus performers, we kind of grew up with this, and it kind of became a very normal thing, but I see it when I bring my parents backstage. And my parents are teachers, and they grew up in a tiny little town in Western Germany. And I bring them backstage after a show, and they go through the maze of curtains, and they come backstage, and they feel like it's a very exotic place. All of a sudden, like, the whole world kind of comes together in this tiny little green room backstage. So they come there, and they see people from all over the world. They hear all kinds of languages. Spoken in many, many different accents, like a Siberian hula hoop artist that speaks German with a Bavarian accent because his family was traveling with a circus and they stopped in Munich for 5 years, so he went to school. They see the Russians telling the Irish dancers how to like dry clean their costumes by just spraying it with vodka to get the stink out, because the production is only paying for dry cleaning once a week. it's all these kind of stories that feel normal to us as performers who are traveling the world, but I see that they're very exotic and very unique to people who are not included into that world. So this is one part for me to think about arts crossing borders. While this is a very beautiful thing when like people come together and it kind of feels like these boundaries disappear, at the same time I was thinking it's actually also the boundaries that kind of make it interesting for us to travel the world and to work with people from very different backgrounds. And if everything was equal, like there would have been so much of that excitement that we would miss. Cindy, you mentioned that Amar was in Zimbabwe. And I was actually thinking about a story when I was performing in Zimbabwe a couple of years ago. It was my first time in Africa. And to get the chance to go to the capital city, Harare, and just see the way that people have to live their lives there, to see them in a time of where inflation like went through the roof, and you see long queues on the ATMs, and you go to the supermarket because we wanted to buy a couple of snacks, but then all you see is empty shelves. And they only put up whatever they have that day, and usually that was bananas. And you see people paying for these bananas with like stacks of money. It just made me wonder, like, what does life feel like if you don't know what a banana costs tomorrow? Because today, it already is a trillion Zimbabwe dollars. And I'm not kidding, they come with their stacks of money there to like buy 5 bananas. And it's these kind of stories that also connect the world to me, because I was thinking of my grandparents who were in a similar situation in the 1920s in Germany, when inflation went through the roof there as well. And to make that connection, that global connection, is like a very big part of my life in circus as well. Saying that, I just want to like touch on one last thing. I mean, and that's probably something that we all agree on, like art is a very beautiful language to overcome boundaries as well. I've done several arts and circus projects across the world where I was working either with local artists to create a show together or with kids who have never done acrobatics before, and I'm teaching them acrobatic skills. And it's usually always the same challenges. I mean, we're coming to a country where I don't know so much about the culture, and I don't speak the language, and they usually don't speak my language, or we don't have a language that we share. And I started to have like a set of 10 words that I wanted to learn for each workshop, so that I could like that we could understand each other, besides just using all of our body and heads and feet and legs and arms. So my 10 words were, besides hello and how are you, I think they were, let's see if I can get them together. Good, beautiful, fast, slow, ready, again, can, understand, I forgot the last two, but I know that there was definitely also pain. And these are all challenges. Like, there's many different things I could talk about. Like, of course, body means very different things in different parts of this world. And can man and woman do a workshop together? And is it even offensive to ask if they can do it together or not? All these kind of things. But there's a couple of things that I always see no matter where I go, and that's the smile on the face of a boy who just did a backflip for the very first time, or a girl who just for the very first time supported her older brother on her shoulders. And that's beautiful, and it's beautiful to see how art can just overcome all of these challenges and all of these boundaries. So what do I make of all of this? I think on the one hand, art can be used to overcome these boundaries. And on the other hand, it's kind of beautiful to have the boundaries because it's what makes it interesting. And I feel like it's maybe not the goal of art to deny or completely delete these kind of boundaries, but it's a challenge for, I think, not only us as artists, but for probably many people in the world too. How do we make these boundaries more transparent? How is it more easy to cross these boundaries? And yeah, as I said, I don't only see this in arts, but I see the same challenge with so many immigrants coming into Europe right now, and how do we cross these boundaries there as well?
Hi, this is my first time at this conference. I'm very excited to be here. I didn't prepare anything to say, but when I heard the topic of this panel was art without borders, it led me to think about, are we talking about the art, what art does across borders on the planet, or are we talking about having no borders in the art, and in, there's quite a lot now of multimedia art happening. And I kind of think that maybe some of that is happening because people trying to get funding for arts are going through such, you know, troubled times. It's not flourishing these days in the funding departments. And I feel like the collaborations of a lot of different art forms are getting together to work on that. I think that's, you know, that's going to lead to some interesting art. I'm a jazz musician. I feel that art, as an artist, I'm interested in beauty and I'm interested in truth and great music. And it's amazing that you can, as a musician, you can go anywhere in the world, and there are certain frameworks that we all know. And so if we sit and, you know, you go into a room, it could be completely international, nobody speaks the same language, and you start playing the blues, everybody's in, you know. And it's so, I feel that art is so important in a society. I mean, it's been said, you know, societies can be judged by the art that they produce. And I think we're in dangerous waters in that topic at this time. And maybe we can come up with some good solutions here this week. Ideas. Mm-hmm. Maybe not solutions, but maybe ideas.
Yeah. Elliot?
We'll get there eventually. Writing novels, I'm always sort of obsessed with the intersection of internal and external. And that was actually sort of what I first thought about when I saw the title, Art Without Borders, because if you're making Hollywood movies, you can have special effects, you can have explosions, and you also can't see inside the head of any of the protagonists. So you have to create scenes where it's clear that someone might be enjoying a moment of introspection. But when you're writing a novel, that's sort of the beauty of it. That's where the form shines, is that you can actually really allow the reader to get inside the head of a character and feel how they feel and think how they think. But when you're writing a novel, everybody's sort of writer's block. And the way that I often experience that is that it's sort of funny, because the best writing often comes when it's the most painful to write. You could imagine that if you're writing about, I don't know, a legal thriller, you want to get the details of the courtroom right. But that also means that you have to do the same thing for the internal aspects of the character. And so you have to really figure out how, like, what their emotional journey is. And in order to get that right, in order to get the vocabulary right, in order for it to feel authentic, you sort of have to be your own therapist. Because if you don't understand your own sort of internal life, it's really, really hard to describe someone else's. And so what ends up happening is I sort of feel like whenever I'm writing a new story, I'm trying to identify the borders I have within myself in order to then describe the borders that my characters have to cross in order to grow, right, by the end of the story. And then on the flip side, you're also writing action, right? Like, you're writing these scenes where things are happening. It's not just, you know, having a moment of realization. And so I was trying to think about what, you know, Art Without Borders meant, you know, like outside of the actual creative act of creating art, what does it mean once that art is out in the world? And, you know, I really liked your point about sort of how the definition of art has changed over different historical eras. And I think that one of the really interesting parts about the present moment is that we're now in this moment of, like, extreme convergence. And one of the reasons why that's happening, one of the reasons why the definition that we have might be more shared, right, with people in all across the world, is because of the tools we have to share and distribute that art. And, you know, I think it's just wild that you you have, like, thousands of hours of video uploaded, like, every minute to YouTube, right? I mean, Spotify now has, like, much of the entire music library in the world. Like, there are a million books published every year, but Google's been uploading, like, the backlog of all historical books. And you can basically look at at that as, and most of that, that information and most of those pieces of art are accessible from anywhere. And that's a really, it's a really interesting historical moment to live in as an artist, because your audience instantly becomes global, right? Mm-hmm. But your competition also instantly becomes global. So if you're making short films, now you're not trying to, you know, shine, like you might be shining in your local town if you do a film festival, but the minute that that film gets uploaded to the internet, now you're competing against every short filmmaker in the world, right? So it's a really interesting moment, and there's this sort of conceit in the book world that literature is one extended conversation, right? That authors are all reading each other's work and responding to each other's work. And I think that, you know, the internet has really become this new and much more diverse conversation, mm-hmm. where you have not just authors having books that are online, but and filmmakers having films that are online, but you even have everyone else participating in these other formats like Twitter and Facebook and all this kind of stuff. And so I think from a certain perspective, you can actually look at the internet itself as a whole as sort of humanity's most ambitious art project so far, you know, if you put all of those dreams together. And so I think that, you know, we're on the creative side, you know, I think a lot of, or at least for me personally, a lot of writing, at least, is about finding those borders within yourself. It's really interesting to see that once that art is created, you know, the borders are breaking down, for better or worse.
Yeah, great. Good morning. Oh, yeah. Have you got this
access
here?
It's in the other room.
It's in the other room? Mm-hmm. Okay. Just, I wanted to do like just a little bit of experiment with Claire. We have met briefly last night, just saying hello. The example I wanted to show you guys is, we haven't, I mean, first time, because you're jazz musician, yes? So we are playing tomorrow night at the jazz concert. And this is, I mean, we said hello last night, yeah, where do you come from, what do you play, and briefly we met. But I can assure you now that if we play together, it's just like small demo, that we can hug each other after the small, just demo, if you want, I don't know. Then I can, I can fill my time in talking while you get back, Claire, no problem. This is the example that I have experienced in my life, you know, meeting musicians for the first time, even without saying hello. Playing on stage at jamming with other musicians, inviting myself or through a friend or through one musician that I know to invite me to play percussion with a group playing on stage, and been in many places in the world, I have experienced that really, I mean, wow, beautiful feeling that you don't even speak the same language, but we speak through our instruments, through our soul, through our energy, through our music, because music is universal, diverse language. So for me, it's so beautiful and so joyful. And the experience that I have learned out of all that, you know, humanity, you know, of art without borders. This is maybe one of the best, really, like panels that that I am involved in, Art Without Borders. Because for me, is if I think about it, like I'm lucky person to be born first as a musician, as to play my instrument, the percussion, as a composer, as a playing piano, as I'm very joyful person. I'm very happy about what I have. Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, the mic is, yeah. So being traveling everywhere since I was 14 years old till now, I haven't stopped traveling. They ask me, Ronnie, I mean, aren't you tired, man? Traveling what? You've been to Australia last week. I went to Sydney, like, you know, 14 hours from, well, more than 14 hours from Lebanon, if I want to just like count to Dubai, Sydney, and believe me now, it's for me, I love traveling. I love challenging. I love challenge in life. I love to challenge myself. Even in the plane, when I'm sitting by myself, they ask me, aren't you bored? Like, I said, no, because I learn about movies even, talking about movies. And I'm writing each movie I'm watching on my notes here, just not to forget the movie that I have been. And I have big list now. Good friend of mine in Boulder has taught me to do this. And I have learned, you know, how, what's the collection of movies, and then what to repeat to watch the movies, because I'm learning a lot from the movies as well. Not only because of the music, I'm a big fan of soundtracks. So it does all include humanity, art, music, without borders. For music, there is no borders. That's why, I mean, tomorrow night we plan at a jazz concert. I have no idea yet what will be playing, what music. Even I haven't prepared my piece, to be honest. I have a few in mind, but I'm sure that is going to be a great concert. I mean, that's what I wanted to do, this challenge with Claire. Maybe we've had only maybe 15 words together. But now I'm going to show you, she's here. And I'm going to show you, we're going to play anything. I don't know what we're going to play. And this is a small example how what we can do. I'm going to bring my instrument as well. I have my instrument here. Thank you.
Awesome. So, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Did you want to say anything else?
No.
Okay.
It's just like this is just like a short, really short example of what, because you never know what to expect, to what kind of melody, what kind of pattern, what kind of so it's just like you know, eye contact and the interaction, how where and I mean, we could. I'm sure we could play for an hour. If we do the same thing, we could improvise for 1 hour. Just for me, this is a dialogue. This is a language. This is a dialogue because using our mind in different way. So there is no language, no words, just like feeling each other, even without even looking at each other. But we could feel that energy. We could feel that language together. So this is for me, I mean, music is one of the most beautiful things. It's not a thing. I cannot describe music. So what it is, music? It's like, can you describe water? I don't know. Maybe, yes. But it's like water. Music for the soul is exactly like water for the body, for humans. Exactly. I mean, this is for me beautiful. I'm a big fan of, I love art, you know. I appreciate so much art. And this is because, and you cannot put politics and art together, separate them, because they don't match. This is what I don't like in this world, what is happening now. There is no nationality for music. So this is why I'm here. I have been coming for this is my 13th year in CWA, through a friend of mine in England, because it happened that I was playing with him in a pub, Sunday, lunchtime. He invited me, some friends of his saw me playing there, and they invited me to see CWA because he did it already. Good friend of mine, Derek Nash, sax player. So that's why I'm here in Boulder, and I've been coming for the last 13 years. And yesterday, I released my new trio album. I had 3 concerts in Boulder with my trio, 2 musicians, amazing musicians from Russia, that we have produced an album together. And the music we have created in that album has, I don't know, I mean, for me it was a magic. We did the recording in 1 day, and it's a new, added a new experience to my life, what we can do with the music. And what the most important thing is to give you guys, the audience, the joy and the memory that you can get out of this room or from a concert room, what you have gained out of that experience. Because I'm sure that we can change lives. Even happiness, because happiness has no destination. So even with me as an artist, as a musician, I go out. I lived in London for 11 years. I used to go out from a concert hall. I still remember now some beautiful images and moments that really meant to me watching artists performing. And one of the most beautiful feelings I had last October, when I was performing in Barbican Concert Hall with the London Symphony Orchestra, I was performing video games music, one tune, and I had, on the applause when I finished, I just looked up there and I thought, 19 in the 90s, I used to come here and watch the LSO performing, and I wished that I will perform here 1 day, and I did. And believe me, that feeling has changed a lot in my life. As dreams can come true, so there is no borders for me in music. And I'm glad to do this in life. I'm glad what I'm doing. I'm so happy that I'm traveling and I'm spreading music, art, and beautiful things, you know, in the world, different what is happening, all the war, all the bad stuff. So, yeah, we could continue on and on, but
cool.
Here we go.
Thank you. Beautiful.
That was really exciting, and it made me wish that I knew how to scat or something. So, you know, obviously we just shared a language of music which can transcend borders. And some of the stuff that was brought up, I think specifically by Amar, is kind of how different cultures have their own types of art and their ways of creating music, art, writing, stories and stuff like that. So and then we have our own cultural experience, and then we often fuse it in our art. And so I'm just curious to ask if anybody would like to share about your experience, whether it's bringing your art to other people who maybe don't share the same background, and or how you have sought to maybe integrate other perspectives in your art. And that could be, you know, borders, and it was mentioned here, whether political or across different modalities in art, or across tradition, social acceptance, all that kind of stuff. So any kind of boundary. So the definition, one definition of border that I found is the edge or boundary of something. So that's kind of what I'm going with here. So does anybody have anything they'd like to share along those lines? Does that make sense? Okay. I'm going to let whoever wants to go, go.
Are you asking for examples of that?
How you have done that, how you hope to do that in your own personal experience. Go for it.
I've always felt that sort of like the what comes out, at least writing stories, is a product, at least in part, of what goes in. And so I've actually tried to become more and more conscious of what I read, because it ends up, and not just read, what I listen to. We were just talking about how I'm starting to discover jazz, like in the past year. So now, you know, what I listen to, what I watch, and what I read, I've become really conscious of that, because I think that right now we are so overwhelmed by sort of everybody wants us to see their stuff, and like your pocket's probably buzzing, even though it's on silent with some notification that you should be reading this article or whatever. Yeah. And so I've actually really tried to reduce the amount that I respond to those stimuli in my own life, and try to really choose, okay, if I am going to read a piece of journalism, I want to make sure it's a piece of journalism that I can really learn something from. The same goes for what I read and where that comes from. So I very intentionally try to read across genres, read authors from many different countries that have really different cultural contexts, and also consume across media, right? So what can you learn from listening to a jazz concert or listening to this improv session right now that might make its way into a story one day? When I write a story, the only thing I have to draw on is my own experience, right? And so being conscious about creating your own experience is really important. But I think that the other thing I find interesting around storytelling specifically, and there probably are good analogs that I have no idea about in the world of music and visual art, but one of the really interesting things is if we you know, put ourselves 1,000, 2,000 years into the past, when maybe there were more very clear borders, or at least you had cultures that didn't interact as much, you know, in terms of trade, in terms of language, in terms of anything. One of the really amazing things is that we read mythology from almost every culture in the world. The story structure is almost identical, which is super strange when you think about it, right? And, you know, Joseph Campbell was a historian and mythologist, and was very famous in the 20th century. He did a really famous series of PBS interviews with Bill Moyers. He wrote a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces, which is essentially describes how if you deconstruct myths from cultures that are completely removed from one another, the stories follow the exact same arc and like use the same tools and have this very, very strong underlying narrative to them. And I think that that's really, I mean, I just find that to be wild, right? I mean, it's really crazy when you think about the fact that you can have people living on opposite sides of the earth for so many generations, and yet we still tell stories in the same way and use the same language. sort of, it's really interesting how you have to pull from, you know, pull from the diversity, the beautiful diversity that we have here on mm-hmm. Earth in terms of art form, but also that there is something essentially mm-hmm. human underneath it.
Yes.
Anyone else want to share?
Amar? Sure. So with portals, we have them from, you know, Herat, Afghanistan, to Gaza City, to Havana, and people come in and they speak to one another across all these forms. So, you know, you might connect Havana and Iran one day, Iran and the U.S. next. And one of the things that has been very compelling to watch is people coming in and speaking about sexuality, whether the, you know, if they're in the closet in a country where they can't come out, talking about, you know, gender issues. We've had many women and men who've never been in the same room as someone of the opposite gender alone, and in a portal, they're not in the exact same room. There's a big screen that connects them, but they feel like they're in the same room. And so there are these very powerful encounters that happen across forms of distance. And just to circle it back to what we've been talking about and why I think art is so important there, is because if people went in it, you know, and they felt like they were supposed to have a feeling, you know, they were supposed to come out and accept gay people, or supposed to come out and have a different view of gender relations, I do not think any of these powerful encounters that we've seen would happen. But because we say this is in the context of art, this is in the context of you creating your own experience, it allows for a certain kind of, what I would say is a political action, but that happens precisely because it's not, there's not a politics imposed on the encounter. And so this is where I think, just again, a different formulation of what I was saying before, art has this incredible power to have two musicians play and be able to hug afterwards, in large part in this example because they weren't competing for a $1 million prize. They weren't, you know, they were doing it for the sheer joy and the creation of this piece of beauty. And so the only other thing I'd say on this, which I think is an important note, is, you know, it's interesting because as we all talk about genre, and we might have a preference for one genre or another, but there's this tendency in how we think about art to think, well, even if I don't like that genre, that person has made an exceptional piece of art within that genre. Mm-hmm. And that distinction between preference and like assertion of truth and beauty is an essential part of what makes art different from just preference, right? Like I like that Snickers bar more than, you know, Twix, but no one would say that that is like an aesthetic artistic choice. But they would say that about compositions. And so what is that really? Well, that's the human impulse to make claim to fundamental truth, to say this is fundamentally beautiful. There's nothing objectively true about this. I mean, maybe there is something biological about the history of the human story, but at root, it's we have somehow created this sphere where we allow people to lay these claims. And the reason I think that's also so political is because in theory, our politics should be driven by fundamental truths and values that we each feel is critical. You know, we think fairness, justice, whatever it might be. And then in politics, we try to actualize it in a similar way that we do, I think, in art. But in both domains, there's this risk of the $1 million prize. There's this risk of us not being authentic and truthful. And I think the example of the music was so powerful because there was no ancillary motive. It was about the creation of a shared beauty between people. Yeah. And so that's how I would tie it in, I think, to art's importance in this moment of political division is, I think, precisely that. It can be, it can address all these things laterally. You know, it doesn't take on anything explicitly, but as a result opens us up to many more possibilities than I think we sometimes realize.
Anyone else want to share on that? Well, I received a question from the audience that kind of goes along with that. Yes, today art easily crosses borders and cuts across cultures, but to what end? To artist collaboration is fulfilling, but but how can you take it to the next step of broader acceptance, empathy, and understanding on a larger scale?
Well, I would just argue that you don't instrumentalize art in that way, you know, and that as soon as you do that, you undermine this sort of unique, and what I would say is unique historical definitional moment where it can do a lot of things, you know, but if someone comes in and is even more repulsed by something after this authentic encounter, you know, I don't tend to find it happens, but if it does, you know, at least it goes beyond these like media tropes, you know, and at some level I think there's a difference between acceptance and approval or you know, empathy and the breaking down of grotesque stereotype. And I would just be much more modest in one's ambitions and say, like, let's just move beyond the most heinous stereotypes of one another and then, you know, see what happens. Because we are different, that's great. We don't want to be the same. And empathy, sympathy, empathy, like, these are pretty low, these are pretty aggressive terms. And I think, if all art does is complicate, that's probably enough. You know?
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I guess the flip side of that is that I don't think that there is really much that we as individual artists do that is beyond anything beyond what you said. But I think that there are some sort of interesting concrete examples of that, like your project that you were describing earlier. Is actually, like, that project would have been impossible to pull off 200 years ago, right? And so, like, there is something to the fact that, although I don't think that should really play any more of a role in the creation of a piece of art or necessarily in like, how you deal with it afterwards, the tools we have today actually make it so that if you make a piece of art that is authentic, it is possible that it connects people that it never would have connected before. But I guess that's almost like after the fact.
All right, I just got a question for Lena. And if there's more to this, please come up and feel free to share at the microphone. Circus, dance, athletics, how does embodied art cross human borders? Does that sound about right? The body as art, how does that cross human borders? Is that your question? Or?
Got it. do I understand your question correctly, that you mean like how do we use our bodies as a like mean of, as art? Okay. It's one of these questions that, of course, it's so natural to me to use my body as something to express art or to express an opinion or to express a feeling. What I think makes it so universal is that we all come with bodies, right? I don't need to take a brush in my hand and need a empty canvas to paint something. I don't need to pick up an instrument and learn it. And that was something that was always very exciting, to go out into the world and work with people that had never touched acrobatics, for example, before. And there were no dancers and had never really used their bodies as a form of art. And it's very beautiful to see how you do not need to know a lot of skills to express something with your body. It really starts with how do we interact with each other. Even if we're not speaking, how do we look into each other's eyes? And what does our body posture say? What impression do I make when I sit like this and I don't really talk into the microphone because you can't hear me? Or if I'm trying to sit up straight and trying to open up my chest, so it makes me more vulnerable as well. But But these are just like languages that don't even need the skills of dance or of athletes or of acrobats, but it's something that we share all over the world, and it kind of connects a little bit to what Elliot said about the base of stories that have been told over centuries and centuries all over the globe, that they have the same kind of roots. And I do feel like our bodies do the same thing. Like we all come with the same skills, and some of us are using them for art, and all of us are using them for living. So I hope that kind of answers your question.
All right, how
Can
about
I
this?
Say something?
Oh, yes, please.
I think, too, the art of living, art is such a hard word to define. I mean, art doesn't, excuse me, art to somebody means painting, and art to somebody else means music, and art to somebody else means dance, and art to somebody else means how the furniture is arranged in the room. And somebody else, you know, I mean, art is what's on the paper, or art's on, you know, the many other skills of life or facets of life. So I think art, as a word, is just almost impossible to define, and it's so varied. Like the art, like you said, our bodies are like a piece of art. Every one of us is so different. It's hard for me. Sometimes I think it's so amazing that we're all even the same species. and we are, because we're so different, but we're the same, and we have this common human experiences that, you know, show up in the stories or show up in the ways that we express, you know, our experiences. So, you know, art without borders, that's, you know, it's pretty cosmic thought.
Yes, I'll add on that. Yeah, I'll add on that, you know, talking about using our body, you know, like... dancing as well. It's a beautiful art that I've seen people back home in Lebanon. You know, I used to go to for fun learning to dance tango and salsa and rumba and samba, and I really discovered, like, I've met new friends, and I saw people there that they have learned something new, and dancing with passion, even dancing the tango from Argentina, and you could see, like, on their eyes the happiness of yes, I'm learning, I can do something new. And how far is Argentina from Lebanon? So, but it's not about the distance; it's about, like, the music, the feeling, and how it can make people happy as well, dancing. I mean, for me as a musician, going to dance salsa nights, I have done it for, like, you know, for 3 years in a row. And I was like, really, I'm still a big fan of dancing, because when I go and dance, I feel like, it's just like a buzz. I'm doing something beautiful, something includes music, and it does include to move my body. I sweat, I get really excited about it, dancing with people, having fun, having this kind of, you know, sharing energy. And so you could see the joyful, like, you know, in people's life also. So dancing, I mean, for me, it's one of my hobbies, beside the skiing, for example. But you know, it's something really beautiful. So I agree with you about how using our bodies and dancing, it does include this. So, yeah. I'm sure maybe some of you, I don't know if you dance guys here, because I'm sure you have, like, groups that, you know, it's beautiful for everyone. I advise everyone to go and even play music or dance or try something new in art, because nothing is impossible. And it could, you know, like, include all of us with the same, you know, joyful.
Everybody get up.
So, yeah.
There's some, like, great examples of, you know, the performance art in the 40s and 50s is full of incredible characters. So you have this guy, forget who his name is, but he did this epic piece called The Disappearance, where he walked into the water and was never heard of again. These are real lives. You know, Chris Burden in the 60s, like, shot himself as a protest of the Vietnam War. This was a big thing. He then nailed himself to a cross. You have Marina Abramovich. And so there's this, like, evolution of the body in art, which is really resonant with everything we're saying now, because historically, you know, art is disembodied. It was the production of something outside of yourself. And by bringing it in, it was a gesture of saying, you know, art is how we live. Art is life. It is inextricable. And then we combined it with sort of conceptual art and all of these movements. You come to where we are today, where art is very difficult to define and put boundaries on, because there's been a history of artists basically pushing through the body back out into life. And one of the things I think is most interesting about art now is a lot of artists think about art as being practiced across institutions as well. So whether it's talking about the circus as art as opposed to not, that's both a political act, but it's also a... And so I would argue art is fundamentally a social assertion today. It's an assertion that you are art. And in that way, it's also a political act. And it claims a certain way of being relative to society and the law, like First Amendment protections and so forth. So I think it's a really interesting like evolution in how each of us thinks about it. But I know with Portals, our team thinks about, you know, what is the economic structure? If we're a for-profit versus a non-profit, how do we distribute shares if we are in fact a shared entity? And then how do we think about law, obeying it, violating sanctions law? Is that part of the piece or not? And this is where it gets really blurry. I think there's a very strong critique being like, well, you're justifying being corporate, you know? But I think that in that space, there's really interesting questions that are very hard to define. But where the assertion of being art is itself, I think, a critical component, as opposed to the assertion of being something that's preference-based.
That actually reminds me of something that I was recently reminded of, that there are several Native American cultures that do not have the word art in their vocabulary because it is just a part of everything, which I always find to be really interesting. Here's a question from the audience. Are there any borders that should not be crossed by art?
Oh.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That's a good answer.
You shouldn't kill people.
That's a good one. I'm willing.
Well, if you guys think of any, we can bring them. We can come back to that. Here's another one that's kind of existential. Is art art without an audience?
That's beautiful.
I would say yes.
I
vote yes on that one. I sit in a room by myself and play the saxophone a lot.
I do the same with my piano.
Yeah. I'll go with yes.
Both, actually, you know, because we have, we have our own crazy world and crazy moments, being alone, being by ourselves, just like to compose, to play, to think, to create, and also to think what audience will like, what will enjoy, and to think that... Really, I mean, if for example, when I sit and play my piano and compose, and sometimes I have many questions, sometimes I don't. I just leave it up to the audience to decide. So, I mean, personally, I spend lots of time by myself in my studio. I go, back home from my studio to sleep like 5 o'clock in the morning. So. But I have my time. It's just like after 8 p.m. or 9 p.m., maybe after 12 p.m. a.m. So just to think and to play and to create and this time of night, I think differently because it gets quieter. We have our moments. That also we have. It makes us. I don't know. It's a personal thing. I mean, for me, just like sometimes I come back to my studio the second day and listen to something that I have done, and what have I done? No, like really, did I do this at that time of the night? So it's interesting actually. So we can be, art can be only for us, but the most important thing is how to let it out to the audience, and what's the message we could. Spread out. So it's a positive message. I mean, music is. So that's what I say.
I think it's also just that it's totally viable to have an audience of one, right? Like I've always thought of like stories and art as sort of a gift, right? Like it's like I find that to be like a useful heuristic, sort of like you were saying, if you're making something to make a profit, like it's not. I mean, I think it's wonderful when people can make profit with art, but if you're making art for the purpose of profit, I think that can then sort of muddy the waters a bit. And so I always try to think about anything I'm making as sort of a gift. And just like with any other gift, it is totally fine to give yourself a gift every once in a while. but if you only give yourself gifts, that's also a bit of a shame, right? Like there are a lot of other people that are missing out, and like you also, like, you know, it's often much more fun to give than to receive. Right, and that feeling of generosity that I think a lot of what, I think that you will never, you become an artist by wanting to share that message, right, like with the world, and you think of it as a gift, hopefully other people agree with you. but yeah, that's why I think it's viable to have an audience of one, and it's wonderful to have an audience of one.
But let me tell you one thing, I'm sure Claire will agree with me. Maybe people won't know about what we suffer. Art is beautiful. For us, music is. This is what I want to do in life. Since I was 10, I knew that I'm going to be a musician. I used to be in class and thinking just music, playing with my pen, just like this. I'm just like my mind were somewhere else. I knew that I'm going to suffer. I knew that I'm going to be very happy. And the only thing which is I don't like about what I do is that we do it as our living. It is our living. It's reality. But in music, sometimes as a freelancer, sometimes we have jobs, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we have gigs, sometimes we don't. So this is, I don't like the sign, because I don't think the sign of dollar when I'm performing on stage. So I don't know if we should do it for a living or just like do it for free, but how do we survive on the other hand? So this is like, you know, and some, I know like some musicians, that they do it as a job, you know. We play with the musicians that we play the same music as the artistic music we want. I have friends back home. They told me, Ronnie, you should think more business. I'm not a good businessman, I admit it, because I'm doing music for art, and I live for this. Sometimes I suffer. I could do commercial. Commercial could be clean and nice, because these days, you know, commercial music, like everywhere, you know, it has corruption. So some musicians, they have to do it as a business to survive. They think more business than art. But for me, it's, I think art more than business. And I do suffer sometimes in my life. I don't want to be like in depth, so in my back account. This is what I'm only afraid of. But I'm continuing to do, because believing in art, I don't want to include the word money. So this is what I hate. This is the only side which is I don't like in our music life. But always I have something inside me, the positive beauty about music, there is always beautiful music. So never give up on that. And we'll survive. So we're surviving. That's it.
Well, the conceit is that when bankers get together, they talk about art, and when artists get together, they talk about art.
Not so much, really.
So kind of along the whole audience discussion, we got another question that that you guys have kind of touched on, but maybe this might open up some other ideas. What's the place of performance across cultures, and why place art in front of an audience? What is the audience addition to the artist's creation?
Actually, I feel this question kind of connects a little bit to what we've been talking about just before. When you were asking, does art exist without an audience, or does art need an audience? And to make that connection with making a living with art. And I feel these kind of things are a little bit connected, because if you want to make a living out of your art, you need to think about your audience. And to have the audience in mind, I think probably every artist understands that it's sometimes a challenge of what are the things that I want to express and how is it received? And do I just want to be provocative, or do I want to be liked, or do I want to be understood, or do I have a strong message that I want to bring to my audience? And in creation, I feel like it's hard to completely ignore the audience in this and really just focus on what you want to say. Or I would maybe say it's a choice. But for me personally, I always also have the audience in mind when I do a creation, because I want to know, for me it's a dialogue. I want to understand how my message is received and what the audience gets out of this. So I feel like these two things are a little bit interconnected, but I'm curious to hear what you guys have to say.
I would say that I live in different worlds, on different days, and I play some music that I just play, like the probably the freest jazz that I play. I play for my own enjoyment, and I know that in a lot of cases it's a lot more fun to do than it is to listen to. And so I just do that. I do that. And sometimes I do that with friends. I have great musician friends, and we play free, and we sometimes we get gigs and we go out. There are places to do that where the people that are interested in listening to it come. And, I love that element of my life. That's really important. But for me, in that instance, I'm not thinking about the audience at all. That's really for the enjoyment and just the pure musical expression that happens. And that can be, whose tune is it? Mingus, Ugly Beauty. It can get ugly, and it's real and it's beautiful. And then there are other situations, like when I perform with my quintet and my most recent band, I'm very verbal with the audience. I really like the idea that we're all in a room together sharing an experience, and I want the audience to know that I know that they're there, not overly. I'm not pandering, but I enjoy the interaction with people, so I think all of it can exist.
Yeah, I've always sort of, like you said, enjoyed being in a room with the audience. I've always thought of storytelling. I always try to like visualize it as like literally being around a fire. Like the last time you went camping and you're, roasting marshmallows and you are around a fire. Like that's how humans have done storytelling for, and circus as well, right? For and music. for tens of thousands of years. So I find that to be a really good sort of mental model for getting myself in that headspace. At the same time, I'd be interested to hear if this sort of translates into other formats, but one of the things I found with writing is there's this weird dichotomy. Written stories are actually quite strange, right? I mean, it's like a bunch of symbols on a piece of paper, or now a Kindle or phone or whatever, and it's not a live format usually. We still have stand-up comedy, which is like a really successful live storytelling format, but for the most part, there's a lot less like live narrative storytelling. Most of it's written. And that means that it only comes alive in the mind of the reader, right? So like when we read stories, just like when we watch movies, you'll notice that like scene cuts are like, there is a lot that happens between one scene and the next, and we're filling that in our head, right? So like next time you watch a movie, it's not all one cut, right? I mean, there are hundreds and hundreds of cuts in any film, and in books it's the same thing. You are filling in the rest in your head, and that's actually, I think, what makes it fun to be in the audience, because you're actually a participant, even really hard time keeping the audience in mind because I feel like I don't know them very well. And so I end up writing for myself because I'm the only person that I know well enough. Like, I know my own taste. And so I end up, like, writing something and then just hoping that readers might also, like, agree with me, basically. So, I don't know. It's sort of odd. Maybe that's because, as a format, like, writing stories is so fundamentally disengaged from a live audience, right? Like, now I'm seeing you guys. I can see if you're engaged or if you're checking your phone or if there's eye contact or questions. When I'm, like, sitting at home working on a story, I don't get that feedback loop for 2 years, usually, mm-hmm. right?
All right. For the last 3 to 4 minutes, here's a question on a new, totally different subject. Well, not really. Is there a border between art and science? To switch gears. Anyone want to go there?
Sure. Yeah, I love this question. Yeah. Well, all right. My family's in science, and I'm completely away from it. But I always read these like pop physics books, and love it. And so I always like love when scientists say, you know, the impulse that pushes us towards refining a theory of the universe is an aesthetic impulse. I feel very validated by that, and I tell my parents, like, you know. But there's something very, I mean, now having read this from many, many people saying it in different ways, you know, like, what is the idea of elegance and simplicity and a description of the physical universe? What is it about pattern recognition that's so satisfying in the scientific pursuit? Why do people say this feels like an ugly theorem or like an... And so much of it is this impulse towards this, some sort of aesthetic value structure. So in that sense, I think that there is a very common impulse in both. And that beauty in like the way theorems are defined and described by their founders is very similar to, I think, the way beauty is defined in art. The big difference, of course, is in science you can validate the accuracy of theories, and in art you can't. And so that's why I think art is really a domain of politics. And by that I mean it's a domain of like human argument and human agreement or disagreement, as opposed to a domain of, you know, some sort of objective thing. But the impulse that I think humans share towards elegance, towards, you know, this is, I think, a very common impulse across such radically different domains as art and science. So that's my two cents.
Anyone else?
I write science fiction.
Yeah.
So, I guess I mix up the two a lot, but I mean, I really think that like science is beautiful because it's a search for external truth, mm-hmm. and like because it's a search for external truth, mm-hmm. you have to be able to validate it. That's actually part of its aesthetics, right? It's right. Actually that's what makes it beautiful. And art is a search for internal meaning. And so that's also really, really important, and that's something that, at least so far, science hasn't been able to speak to, right? We can do fMRI scans of your brain, but that doesn't really tell us what you're thinking about, like, how you find meaning or what loss means when you lose a child, right? Or those are both really, really, really important parts of the human experience, and they're both really very powerful, and I think they interact, but I actually think that part of the aesthetic beauty of science is that it's the opposite.
That's right.
In a way. It's like a reflection of each other.
They both claim truth.
And there are some great quotes. I can't remember any of them, but Einstein said some great things about music and about the power of music. And I know I keep referring to music, but that's just my wheelhouse. The deep soul connections they're undoubtedly connected. Art and music.
All right. We are at time.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody who had questions that we didn't get to answer, I apologize. There's a lot of good stuff. So thanks so much for coming, and enjoy your week.
Yeah. You did so well. She was nervous. Yeah, I'm like,
why? You're good.